That gives us 7.3 million yen. So if that's a house, it's going to be fairly old, in a city. If it's out in the countryside, you might be able to get something younger for that price. But if it's within reasonable distance to a medium or you know, large city, that's going to be fairly old. So we normally tell people if they want to avoid the headaches of, you know, rapidly increasing and unstable maintenance expenses, it's probably best to aim for 20 years and younger if you can, or at least 30 years and younger. Because once they hit 35, 40 is when things tend to start breaking down a bit more rapidly. They're just not built to last in Japan, not very durable materials. So 7.3 million would definitely not be 20 years and younger in those locations, maybe 30 years and younger if we're lucky. So, yes, there would be a structural inspection involved if we're going for 30 years and older, because I mean, if you can afford it, I'd go for it anyway, but definitely 30 years and older, you want a structural inspection, and that will add about, depending on the size of the house, if it is a house, would add about 1,000 to 2,000 bucks to your total expenses. Hi there, folks, and welcome or welcome back to Nippon Trading International's Japan Real Estate Podcast. I'm your host, Ziv Nakajima again, and this podcast is brought to you, among others, by Emil Gorgis of realestate.jp. He's a Tokyo real estate agent who specializes in serving international or mixed nationality families who are looking for the perfect family home. So Emil's an Australian. He's been living here in Japan for over two decades now. And for about half of that time, he's been buying, selling, and managing real estate properties in Tokyo on behalf of his own family and a great many happy clients. And he also acts as a mortgage broker on behalf of his clients. So he's got dedicated loan officers in many of the Japanese mega banks. And if you're a regular listener of the podcast, you probably already know him from our JREP, the Japan Real Estate Experts panel sessions, which means that you're already aware of the fact that the man is an absolute fountain of wisdom on all things related to real estate in Japan, and in particular to family homes, the greater Tokyo metropolitan area, and mortgages. And most importantly, he's incredibly generous with his time and advice, which he's more than happy to provide at no cost or commitment to anyone asking. So if you've been thinking about buying your home in Tokyo, but you've been sitting on the fence for a while, or you just want to have a chat in English with a real expert, drop him a line on sales@realestate.jp. Hit him up today and start exploring your options. All right, so we'll jump into today's episode right away. Just a quick reminder before that, early bird discounted tickets. Pre-registration is now open for the April 2026 Japan Real Estate Summit in person in Tokyo or streamed online. Almost all of your favorite speakers from the past summits, plus some new and exciting speakers, will be announced over the next couple of months. And of course, the best and biggest English-speaking Japan real estate property community will all be there, as always, with exciting new updates and tips and tricks, connections to be made. Hands down, the best industry event in Japan, as you know well if you've attended any of the past ones. That's 18th and 19th April 2026 at the fabulous Pullman Hotel, Tamachi in Tokyo, and online. So hop over to the show notes or to our website, nippontradings.com, N-I-P-P-O-N, Nippon Tradings with an S, all one word, .com, and secure your discount today. So today's episode. These are two back-to-back conversations with home buyers. The first is with a US couple who've quickly become one of our favorite clients, Anthony and Jody, aka Learners and Makers. They've got very cool stickers that I've got a few of on my laptop, and they're real digital nomads, as opposed to many of you wannabes out there. Travel bloggers traveling the world with their gorgeous homeschooled kids, and they were seeking a family home base in Japan, which they've now already bought, and you can check out their videos of the new home, as well as all of the rest of their very cool videos on their YouTube channel, and we'll link to that one in this episode show notes too, but it's easy to find. Just search for Learners and Makers Travel Family on YouTube. And we chat about their personal life journey, where they've been in the world, and why did they decide to settle or kind of settle in Japan. Where in Japan would they prefer to live? What's their budget? How that budget works if they're considering houses versus condos? Pros and cons of both of these strategies? What's involved in the purchase process and how long does it all take? What would that budget get them?
We also dig a bit deeper into the pros and cons of buying older houses, specifically how viewings work, and also what are the caveats of non-rebuildable properties, which are pretty common here. So a real nice deep dive into buying a holiday slash family home in Japan. Enjoy this first conversation, and I'll see you again right before the next one. Okay, so awesome to see you again, just for the sake, because we're recording this one, just for the sake of our viewers and listeners who don't know you, can you give, and also to refresh my early onset Alzheimer memory, can you please remind us who you are and what you're looking for?
Do you want to start us off then?
Sure. We're the St. Clair family. We've been traveling the world full time for the last 2.5 years. And we are looking to make a little bit of a base for our full-time travels in Japan so that we have a place to just kind of settle into and have some stuff in. We still are not looking at doing like a working visa or business visa there. We're just still going to be just kind of going to experience Japan during our 3-month limit that we have, but we really love the idea of being able to have a place to kind of regularly come back to, because we keep coming back to Japan over and over and over again.
It happens.
Yeah, we visited 3 times. First visit was 2013 when our son was a toddler. We visited as well in 2023, 2024, and we're coming back this summer. So we're not totally Japan newbies. We still have a lot to learn, but it is the place that when we talk as a family about where we love going, want to go back to, it's always Japan at the top of the list, especially when you ask our children.
Yeah. And speaking of that, I mean, I know it's not directly real estate related, but it's very interesting for a lot of people. You guys you're not traveling alone. You've got the whole set with you, and you've been doing it for a while, and you've got jobs that complement them. Can you tell people a little bit about how that works? Because a lot of people are interested in that lifestyle.
Sure. So we are travel content creators. That's a combination of freelance work, blogging, YouTube, different projects with various clients in the travel and hospitality industry. So that is part of what helps us travel the way we do. Jody and I run our own little company, which gives us the flexibility. Or when there's something business related, then it's easy for me to talk to the HR director because I see him in the mirror. That makes it very easy for us to have the travels. We've also always homeschooled both our children. Our son Connor is 13, our daughter Aster is 10. So they've always had more familiarity with the homeschool and now world school environment. So that helps us a lot with taking them to different cultures and countries and just giving them this broader sense of how they can find community and opportunity anywhere in the world.
Yeah. And you've mentioned that you've been to a bunch of countries and Japan keeps coming back, like the kids want to come back here. But which other countries have you found that you're comfortable in so far?
We really love Southeast Asia. And so we spent quite a bit of time in Vietnam, Malaysia, we're exploring a little bit now and getting more familiar with it. We love Thailand. We love Morocco. I mean, I think we love being in Spain. It's a little hard to like, we haven't found anywhere that we've been like, oh, we don't want to come back here. But, when we really get down to it, we would love to go back, but it isn't like we need to go back now. And Japan always comes back, and like, we want to keep coming back more often than not. So,
Japan.
But we actually love, I mean, we after this last time in Japan, we went to Taiwan and we really enjoyed our time there. So Asia is especially interesting to us. And if we have this kind of base in Japan, it gives us this launching point to explore a lot of the areas.
So Japan is going to be the home base for all of Asia kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Brilliant. So we figure since we can typically be in Japan up to 90 days at a time, then we can come, stay, probably squealing up to that 90-day limit and probably then go out to somewhere else in Asia. Especially we're now in a phase of our travels where we've never been country baggers. We're not trying to just, you know, notch another one on the backpack. We want to go to places that we feel we have an interest in, a connection to. There has to be a good food culture. It doesn't really have a notable food culture. It's probably not going to really entice us to want to make the journey.
And considering your job, it's got to have steady infrastructures too, right?
Yeah.
The steady infrastructure is huge.
Sure. I mean, yeah. Internet for sure. And, you know, we stay longer usually when we're in places too. So we're not doing like 2 days here, 2 days there, 1 week there. We like to stay for a month so that we can really get to know a little bit more of the place that we're in.
Right. Okay. So Japan-wise, now narrowing down, which areas did you have in mind for the home base? And what kind of property, what kind of home base?
Okay, so one of the reasons we've enjoyed connecting with you, Ziv, is since we are this thinner edge of the wedge where it's not all Tokyo all the time, we enjoy Tokyo, but it's not where we want to be. We are much more second, third city folks. That's much more our speed. So we're looking much more at the Osaka area. We're kind of, at this point, looking at a swath from basically Kobe to Wakayama. We're open to things throughout that area. We also, when we were in Japan last year, we spent a month in Kumamoto, and as you know, a few days in Fukuoka. So Kyushu also very much has our attention. We haven't gotten to dive as much into some of the listings in those areas yet, but we do want to get more sense of what's available in those two areas particularly. So those are the main spots that we want to consider at this point. And we view it, you know, we're not trying to find our forever home. We're not trying to find something where a mean popular short-term rental is a priority. We wouldn't necessarily boot it off the table, but we're not wanting a property for the sake of doing investment property. We want a place that's our home base for us, for our kids, so they have a little more sense of place. And some place where it's very easy for us as a family of four, we come to Japan, we don't have to try to figure out a short-term rental that actually is not just, you know, the kids sleeping on a couch next to the kitchen. We want something that can just be ours, has a little more room, a little more comfort, and we can just put our key in that door.
So the prime criteria is to find the ideal holiday home for yourselves, and then if maybe possible down the track, see if you can rent it out when you're not using it, but not a prime requisite. Yeah. Okay.
Precisely.
Only we feel a little flexible on area. I would say we're not interested in Tokyo. When we've been looking at Osaka, it feels like it's on the edge of our budget. So that's kind of why we're like expanding maybe into someplace like a little bit smaller city, not such a hub.
Well, Fukuoka is pretty similar price dynamics. So
okay, to Osaka.
We do have a bunch of smaller cities around here that, I don't know, maybe it's a personal thing, but I feel are a bit more vibrant than the small cities surrounding Osaka. Although Kobe could be interesting. It's cheaper than Osaka and it's quite international and quite friendly.
We like friendly. Mm. So, I mean, that's part of why we've been drawn to Osaka. We've had some of our best, like...
Don't look at Kyoto then. Kyoto don't like to see
us. Yeah,
no. Oh, no, we were
not into us anymore.
Kyoto or just nope.
Yeah, so we don't want snow. That's definitely like, I mean, like a little bit of snow, that's not a big deal, but like not like Hokkaido. You know. So we are looking kind of in the more southern part, mid to southern part of Japan.
When you say Osaka seems to be towards the upper end of your budget, what is your, I'm assuming you're talking about a house, not a condo unit, yeah?
Yeah, you know, we've looked for either, and then we're open to either, but there just seem to be more houses available.
Well, could the advantage of condo units, especially for non-residents like yourself, is that it's a lot less of a hassle and unexpected expenses on the maintenance front. So if you don't want to be you know, constantly dealing with cleaners and landscapers and stuff that breaks down, a condo is probably a better bet. It does limit your rental options, though. The most you'll be able to do with a condo is maybe monthly rentals, definitely not Airbnb and stuff.
Yeah. And that's okay. That's what we've been aware of by listening to a lot of your podcasts. So we figured if we get a house, then we know there's a little more on the table option-wise. 30-day rentals for when we're not around are something like, oh, that might be nice to keep on the table, but again, it's not going to drive the decision. Mm. A couple other factors with house and condo, because it's all such, you know, you kind of move different switches to see what's the right balance. We have another factor where Jody has a prosthetic leg. She's an amputee. So there's also some factor of like with the snow, if it's really snowy during the winter and we're there, that's much harder for her to get around safely.
Yep.
In a similar manner, one thing we want to keep in mind is if we did look at a condo, what floor that condo is on matters, say if there is an emergency situation where we needed to evacuate downstairs.
Oh, that's a very good point. I didn't even think about that.
That's a really important factor. Yeah.
Right. So we're probably looking at either a house or a ground floor or first floor condo kind of situation.
Yeah, right? It could probably be, I think, first, second, or third floor is comfortable. Anything above that feels like more risky, you know, for me, I think. But on the other side, with a benefit with a condo is that it's easier to find like a single floor. You know, you're just, it's not two stories. You're in your unit is just one level. And so you don't have to deal with like the stairs of
on a daily basis. You mean
house,
just around,
you know, where almost all the houses are two stories. So, you know, yeah, it's always like the balance of things. Right. So, I guess because we're not sure, we're still looking at what the options are and what would be the best fit, but we're kind of open to looking at a lot of things still. We're in that stage of like lots of research and looking and information, looking at listings, and we're going to be in Japan fairly soon. And we would like to like have the opportunity to look at some properties and ideally look at properties and maybe make our purchase while we're there.
Yes. Making the purchase is a process that takes a while. So
yes,
once we submit an offer to purchase, assuming the offer was accepted, there's a good, especially because you'll have to provide some documents from overseas, probably have to, I mean, with notarize.com, it becomes faster and easier, but basically assuming that there is some international postage involved at some stage, I would probably assume about 2 months.
Okay.
And if it's a house and we're also doing a structural inspection, that could maybe be 2.5 months because it takes time to schedule and then get the report. Now, here's some big news for anyone interested in Akiya, the abandoned vacant homes that are abundant all around Japan for very attractive purchase prices. Akiya Mart, our latest sponsor, is a recently founded online search and discovery tool for Japanese real estate. Its user interface will be very familiar to users of Zillow or Redfin. The platform essentially scouts the internet for property listings, translates them into English, and displays prices in US dollars, all in one place and with a dynamic map interface that makes browsing, finding, and shortlisting your favorite properties a piece of cake. Which any of you have been struggling with the dozens, if not hundreds, of Japanese property websites that are available online and their very clunky interface will probably find a real blessing. They've got already over 500,000 listings on the platform, and the database is expanding daily. Ranging from abandoned rural homes to luxury urban properties, Akiya Mart makes it easy to find your dream home in Japan, regardless of your budget. Now, while the platform is essentially free for use, here's an exclusive offer for listeners of the podcast. You can use the promo code NTI to receive $5 off Akiya Mart Pro. The subscription will unlock a bunch of very attractive features for you, including unrestricted access to the entire nationwide property database and a whole range of filters, which will help power charge your search for that elusive perfect home and make it even easier. So hop over to akiya-mart.com. That's AKIYA-MART, akiya-mart.com, and kick off your search today. Oh, which brings me back to the topic. Sorry, I lost my train of thought there. What is the top end of your budget? How old would the houses or condos be?
Well, so I think we're looking at around top end of 50 to 60,000 USD. Is that right?
Is that including purchase costs or just the listing price?
That's including purchase costs.
So that at today's rates, which is probably a good idea to lock those in, by the way, I'm not sure how long they're going to last. They're already creeping upwards the yen.
Okay.
So that's 8 million. Let's call it 8.5 just to round it down. 8.5. That's including cost, which could be worst case, let's say 15%. That gives us 7.3 million yen. So if that's a house, it's going to be fairly old. In a city, if it's out in the countryside, you might be able to get something younger for that price. But if it's within reasonable distance to a medium or you know, large city, that's going to be fairly old. So we normally tell people if they want to avoid the headaches of, you know, rapidly increasing and unstable maintenance expenses, it's probably best to aim for 20 years and younger if you can, or at least 30 years and younger.
Okay.
Because once they hit 35, 40 is when things tend to start breaking down a bit more rapidly.
Okay.
They're just not built to last in Japan, not very durable materials.
Exactly.
So
yeah.
7.3 million will definitely not be 20 years and younger in those locations, maybe 30 years and younger if we're lucky. So yes, there would be a structure inspection involved if we're going for 30 years and older, because I mean, if you can afford it, I'd go for it anyway, but definitely 30 years and older, you want a structural inspection. And that will add about, depending on the size of the house, if it is a house, would add about $1,000 to $2,000 to your total expenses.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's really great to know. I think when we've been looking a little bit, that's why Osaka has felt definitely a little bit out of our price range. And we've seen it seems like we've seen like similar properties, but they've been about 10,000 USD less in some of the little bit smaller cities that are close, like Wakayama or Kobe. And that 10,000 at this range makes a big difference for us. So it gives us more possibility for, like, if we need to do like some structural supports or anything like that, you know, like we have a little bit left to kind of work that in. And
well, if it's anything major, we'd probably recommend not to proceed, because if you're paying seven and a half million yen for the property and then you're, you know, forking out another 10 million yen just to bring it up to speed, that doesn't really make much sense, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, we kind of figured too, that's part of that kind of calculus of where that purchase price comes in compared to how much work is needed to make it not even there's something important that needs doing.
My benchmark is always, it costs about 15 million yen or 15 to 20 if you want to get fancy, to construct a kind of cookie cutter typical Japanese family home. So anything that you're going to be paying beyond 9, 10 million yen doesn't make much sense anymore, right?
Okay. Yeah.
Okay,
sense.
So with that in mind, when are you going to be here for the viewings and stuff?
Well, so
we arrived July 1st, and we'll be in Osaka for at least a month. And then we're in Japan through the end of September, but we've kept August and September more flexible, depending on where we want to be, where we want to look.
Yeah, we don't have August and September decided yet when... Like for, we don't have anything planned, basically. It's just flexible.
Okay, so the idea is to spend the first month looking around Osaka, and then the second month maybe looking around Kyushu, and then depending on what we find, you're flexible on moving around, I guess, for the last month.
Right? Exactly, yeah.
Okay. As you've probably heard, if you've been listening to the podcast, like you mentioned, we are a bit too swamped to onboard new clients for full purchase facilitation. But we are building a nice network of foreigner-friendly bilingual agencies that we can work with. I think in your case specifically, just because of your line of work, I might There's a new agent. We haven't worked with him yet. Whoops, that's my timer. Pardon me. We haven't worked with him yet. He's based here in Fukuoka, but he said that he's happy to do anything nationwide. He's already working with an Australian YouTuber doing property tours and stuff like that.
Oh, so there you go.
Be flexible and comfortable if you guys want to record your journey kind of thing.
We will want to record our journey.
I was assuming that might be the case, So we'll work with him. I'm happy to just introduce you, but if you want us consulting on the purchase, we're very happy to do that. That's a few hundred bucks, and we'll hold your hand along the way. We'll create a WhatsApp chat group together, and we'll be with you as you work with the agent, guide them on due diligence, review documents before you sign them, just make sure, review the inspection report, just make sure that we're not making any costly mistakes. So what should I be telling him that we're looking at? That we're looking at both houses and condos as long as they're first to third floor?
I think that's great.
Yes.
There are a few like requirements that we have if we're getting a house too. So Anthony in my bedroom, whatever that looks like, needs to be on the same floor as like the bathroom.
Like, okay.
So for me, that's again, like, because sometimes I'm on crutches. Sometimes I have my prosthetic leg. I just need that flexibility. So
and you prefer a single floor house in any case, right? If possible.
I mean, yes, but I know that's asking a lot.
We know that's unlikely.
Yeah.
So
Japan is not exactly awash in single family ranch homes like we might see in the States.
In the countryside, I've seen these really big ones.
They are out there.
They're like all single floor.
Well, the thing is that a single floor requires, by definition, a larger land plot, and those are easy to buy in the countryside.
And we don't want to be in the countryside. We want to be more in town. We want to rely more on walking and public transportation.
Yeah, I was going to say,
and be more in around some closer neighbors.
To have walkability.
How far, if it's Osaka City or Kobe, which are both kind of big cities, and Fukuoka City, what's the maximum commuting distance that you want to those cities? And does that need to be public transport, or will you always have a car?
We actually feel really flexible with commuting distance because we don't have to go in anywhere to like work or anything. It would just be whenever we want to go and do something, you know? So matters to us is that we like can get to not even necessarily a train station, but like a bus stop or whatever, someplace close by, some sort of transportation, walkable, you know, max like say 10-minute walk to something. And also like a grocery store nearby.
I thought you were always like with a camper van, but obviously, the house kind of negates the need for that. So
yeah, we do in the US. We have an RV, but like we're not we don't have it in when we're internationally outside of the US.
And you're not planning to have a car or rent a car when you're here?
No.
Not at this point. It'd be more we might rent a car for a day trip sort of thing.
Yep.
But for example, some of the listings, Jody's been looking a lot on Akiyamart, and we've been talking now about a few listings in Osaka and Kobe. So Osaka, for example, we like the idea of being within, say, less than an hour's taxi ride to Kansai. So when we're flying in and out, a fairly, not too bad a trip to the airport. So she was finding some listings in Matsubara, Takumi no Sato, and Moriguchi. Those are some areas, not bang on in central Osaka, but you're not all that far. I think they were still maybe 20 minutes train ride to stations like Nambo or Tennoji.
Okay.
So we're fine with some things like that.
So 10-minute walk to a station, which can be a bus station?
Yeah.
In Kumamoto specifically, it might be a tram station. Would that be okay?
Yes, because there's a tram there. Yeah,
we're pretty familiar with the tram.
Okay, and then about an hour by whatever mode of transport, whether it's taxi or a train or a bus, about an hour to an international airport.
Would be nice.
Kumamoto doesn't really tick that.
Yeah, it's not.
But if we're in the Osaka area, obviously in Kumamoto, we'd adjust how we are planning to get.
Shinkansen from Kumamoto to Fukuoka is about an hour.
But of course, the international flights with Fukuoka, we know, are more limited at this point. So it might be some more domestic hop situation, but that's what we can feel out if it seems like we're going to land in that area. It was much more, if we're going to be in that Kobe, Osaka, Wakayama spread somewhere in there, it was more, okay, what's our proximity to Kansai? Since we've got it right here, we might as well, that's where we want to prioritize flying in and out instead of, you know, Haneda or Nagoya.
Well, I mean, Fukuoka Airport is only a 30, 45 minutes flight to Seoul, and you can get anywhere from there.
Yeah, that's
true. Well, that's a really good point.
Okay.
Being in Incheon never hurts my feelings.
Yeah, that's a beautiful
It's a great airport.
Okay. Oh, by the way, have you taken the ferry to Busan? I've only done that for the first time.
Not recently. Yet. No,
we're very interested. Did you like it?
I loved it. Even the bunk rooms are comfortable. And on the way back, I had a private room too. It's very luxurious travel for a very cheap price. And there's karaoke room. There's an onsen, for God's sakes, on the ferry.
Brilliant.
Yeah, very poor man's luxurious, but still luxurious.
Exactly.
I'll take it.
Okay, so just to summarize, we're looking for, if it's a condo unit, definitely 30 years and younger should be easy to find. Oh, what's the floor plan layout? How big do you need the place to be?
At least 3 bedrooms.
But for a condo,
we're looking at doing probably 4 bedrooms, because one of those bedrooms will be kind of like a living space for us. Most Japanese condos and homes don't really have like a living room like we are used to.
A 4-bedroom condo is probably going to be way over your budget, though. So it's
gotta, okay. It's gotta be so house. I mean, definitely at least 3, though. We need 3 bedrooms.
We do want the kids to be able to have their own rooms. That's something that they told us that. They used to be able to share much more easily, and now they're like, "Yeah, we like a little more sense of space." So one of them is
13. I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and it's just it helps them have some better quality of life and more happiness, and that helps us travel more.
3 bedrooms plus the living dining area.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, got it. So 3DK or 3LDK at a minimum.
Yep. Yes. Okay. Exactly.
Okay, well, let's see what we can find. And if it's a house, I'll try to get it 30 years and younger, but I have my doubts at this price. So let's see what we can find.
Well, and that's also where, especially, we're quite happy to look in the Kobe area and the Wakayama area as well.
Yep. Now, if you've attended any of our recent JREP Summit events in Tokyo or online, you've probably heard our sponsor, Robert Miller from Innovatius.com. He's been in WebDiz Solutions here in Japan for the past 25 years, and he's also an active investor in Japanese real estate property, as well as global online property, which is his specialty and what his company Innovatius is all about. They offer a full suite of website services for entrepreneurs and small business owners, including all aspects of web design and management, backup and updates, content formatting and editing, proactive maintenance and error fixing, you name it, with a strong focus on SEO excellence, which is what gets you those hardcore top-of-the-list search engine rankings. But there is a difference. Innovatius works off a simple, all-inclusive monthly subscription model, as opposed to the typical outdated and confusing project model. So you never have to wonder how much any request for any work to be done on your website might cost. It's always $497 per month. And if that's not enough, if you've mentioned you've heard of their services on the Japan Real Estate Podcast, you'll also get 10% off this monthly price for life. Also, and equally important, if not more, you can try out Innovatius for just 1 month, then switch them off, on again later if you want, and so forth. There are no minimum subscription terms. Now, if you're a small business owner, managing and growing a website is super distracting and time-consuming, right? That's exactly where Innovatius comes in. Robert's team takes care of all of that for you so that you can focus on what you do best. So feel free to email Rob on robert@innovatius.com, and his team will conduct a full SEO and website audit on your site, reveal anything that you should address to increase your website's appeal, and provide you with an easy-to-read detailed report with your own branding so that you can make some informed decisions on your online strategy and watch your business grow as you implement it. So once more, robert@innovatius.com, Drop him a line and get your website reviewed today.
A couple questions we had too. So one thing is, we feel pretty neutral about whether or not a property is rebuildable. If it's not, that's not a massive deal to us, but we did want to understand just any other particulars around rebuildability or non-rebuildability that we should just be aware of.
Well, the main issues there are, you're right, it's not a disaster, and a lot of the older properties in Japan are going to be non-rebuildable because zoning regulations get stricter over time. So something that was built 20, 30, 40 years ago now no longer complies with road width or access for emergency vehicles, whatever. So what that means is, number one, if and when you do resell it, you'll be limited to cash buyers only, because lenders won't lend for a non-rebuildable property. So it limits your potential buyer base a little bit. But I mean, these are older houses. It's not like lenders are very excited about lending for them anyway.
Yeah, I was going to say,
And the other thing is, if anything happens to the property which damages its foundation or supporting walls, or at least one of the supporting walls, depending on the local municipality's regulations, beyond repair, that's considered a rebuild. Anything that damages it, but the foundation and the supporting walls are still intact, can be considered a renovation. So you could potentially be able to get away with it. If it is damaged beyond that point, then you will be able to collect your insurance compensation, but you'll need to buy another land plot to rebuild on.
Got it.
Okay.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
And obviously the reason you're buying them fairly cheaply is because you'll also be selling them fairly cheaply. They're going to be priced lower than buildable properties.
Yeah. Right. I think for some reason we were going to a point where we were like not really using it, you know, like we weren't coming enough to justify, or we were worried about it just sitting empty. We would probably look at doing more like a long-term rental with it, and then buy another when it felt like we were coming back again or not or whatever, versus like trying to sell it. So,
well, for that,
we're considering,
for that, we want to be in a city that's not rapidly declining in population.
Yes.
Otherwise, you're not going to have a tenant, right?
That makes sense.
Right. Yeah.
That's like a down the road, if maybe. So I'm not going to prioritize it too much, you know? Mm. But
yeah, we're considering this property is probably somewhere we will be using throughout the next 10 years, especially while both the children are still minors, you know, with us.
Manageable, yeah.
Yeah. And then they'll say, enter their adulthoods. That's probably about when we'll evaluate where we are with that property.
You might be surprised. Mine is 15 going on 16, and it's no longer manageable.
Right. Well, if our son is any indication, for all we know, he's going to hit adulthood and be like, so if you guys move out of that Japan place, can I move in? What if that just became mine?
We got a lot of tenants who are renting out apartments for their kids who are going to even junior high school or definitely high school in some cases. It's not unheard of.
Yeah.
Okay.
Two other quick questions. Just something. As we've gone through listings, a couple of things we've encountered. One, what is a height restriction zone?
Height restriction zone is usually next to airports or places that have stricter landscape protection policies in place. It means that you shouldn't be building beyond the second or third floor, depending on what the local restrictions say, to avoid obstructing the view or because there are airplanes flying above. Like, for example, anything close to Fukuoka Airport is a height restricted zone.
Okay. That makes sense.
Because that's an airport.
Probably not something we need to really.
In other places like Nagano and Niigata, they're very strict on people being able to see the view outside their window. So they're limiting it on that aspect.
Okay.
Okay. And then the other question is, what is a residential land development control area?
Same story. It's a place that makes sure that there's not going to be any major factories, giant skyscrapers built around that keep it nice and comfortable for residential tenants.
Okay.
It's basically like what we've considered zoning laws in the U.S.
Yeah. It's nothing that's going to restrict you. You're working from home, but it's not like you have a shop and people, there's no walk-in traffic or anything like that.
Yes.
So it's not going to restrict you.
Okay.
Okay. Perfect.
Yeah. But it could potentially restrict your Airbnb feasibility.
Okay.
Right. Okay.
Cool.
Great.
I thought there was a cat fight in the back, but it's not.
Oh, yeah.
Any other questions, or are these
Thank
are
you so both... much for your time today.
Oh, pleasure.
Yeah.
So I'll get you to just summarize the criteria for me, because I'm bouncing to another meeting, so I'll definitely forget in about.
Yeah, we'll email you as well some more detailed notes.
WhatsApp is so much better.
Oh, WhatsApp is better. Okay. We'll WhatsApp you some more detailed notes.
Yeah, I mean, you're very welcome to email at any time, but it takes me a while to get back to emails.
Okay. Yeah. At least 3 bedrooms, house or condo, if condo, no higher than, was it the second floor, babe? Third floor, excuse me. No higher than third floor. Primarily Kobe, Osaka, or Wakayama, but also want to consider Fukuoka and Kumamoto.
Okay, perfect. Yeah. Fukuoka and Kumamoto and other places in between. We also have Kurume, Itoshima. They're even closer.
Yeah,
to
I mean, I think.
Oh, yeah. Oh, open. Good point.
Honestly,
yeah.
This is a little bit of the hardest part, is because really we just want to be in Japan, and we feel like I think we would be kind of happy in a lot of places in Japan. The one thing that would be not happy is snow.
Yeah.
Well, the distance to the city/airport is giving us that circle that will limit
yes.
our selection. So we're not going to be anywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good point. I imagine I would want to say we might be open to just about anything on Kyushu, as long as we're more toward an urban area. So Kumamoto, Fukuoka.
Well, Kumamoto, Miyazaki, yeah. The nice places down there, and Nagasaki as well, is more like 2 hours to Fukuoka, though.
Oh, that's okay. A good point. Yeah.
Except Shinkansen. Yeah, you're okay with always using the Shinkansen, then yes, anywhere is within an hour.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I think we'd be open to a lot of those areas. Yeah, especially
Hiroshima, by the way. Hiroshima is also an hour to Fukuoka Airport by Shinkansen.
Yeah, like Hiroshima, Okayama, we just haven't been to those areas yet. We've only, waved to them from the Shinkansen.
Yeah.
So we just don't know yet. But we like the idea of Hiroshima. We just haven't gotten to have
sandals
on the ground.
Really beautiful city.
Yeah.
It's a cute city. I also didn't know it. I didn't know it that well, but I've been going there a lot recently just for customers, and it is a cute city. It's not as international or vibrant or young as Fukuoka, but it's definitely comfortable. If you like Kumamoto, you'll definitely like Hiroshima. It's a lot livelier than Kumamoto.
Okay. Then, yeah, I think we want to consider it, but since we haven't gotten to go there yet ourselves, it's harder to say, oh, yeah, we definitely want to have that in the mix. Yeah. But we did consider that maybe some of our time this summer could be visiting Okayama and Hiroshima and trying to get some initial sense, at least, or see if it could be a good fit.
Okay, well, on your second month when you're on the way to Kyushu, or maybe on the third once you're done with Kyushu, then we can slot a few of those viewings in as well.
Excellent. Okay.
Just bear in mind that for viewings, just because you're gaijins, a lot of the listing agents are going to have issues if somebody doesn't join you.
Yes.
So
yes.
We will need, in most cases, we will need to send somebody in with you, and they'll need to be paid for those trip costs. So we want to focus the viewings on one area per day or two, right? So
yes.
Not like have one in Osaka the next
day. That works much better for us as well. We would much prefer to cluster things, so that way we're just all more efficient with our time and just a little less tiring as we go through the list, as we go through the viewings.
Okay, so in Osaka specifically, just because of, again, the nature of your work and the fact that I could also use some extra content, instead of sending the agent from Fukuoka, I'll probably go with you to Osaka.
Okay,
sure.
And I mean, Kyushu is easy. I'll definitely be happy to join, but the agent will be with us as well.
Okay.
Sure. Yeah, we're happy to work with whatever works best all around for the group. So that's fine by us.
Perfect. Oh, actually, no. From Osaka, we don't need to. You don't need to pay that much. We've got somebody from Osaka who can go with you to viewings. That'll be a lot cheaper.
Okay. Including Kobe and Wakayama.
Yes, he's gone as far as Okayama. Okayama, Wakayama. I can't remember, but he's gone. He's gone far from the city on a few cases. He's definitely open.
Oh, grand. Okay. Yeah. Great.
Awesome. So I'll wait for that summarized criteria and we will take it from there.
Exciting. Awesome.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you so much, Siv.
But let's not wait too long with that, because we usually tell people about a month before arrival is when we want to start having a short list.
Great. Well, we're getting close to that here.
Yep.
Awesome. Talk to you soon and see you soon.
Yay.
Take care.
You too. Bye for now.
Bye, Zoom.
So there you have it. Awesome conversation with Jody and Anthony, aka Learners and Makers. Again, check out their YouTube channel for some firsthand testimonies of their process of buying a holiday slash family home in Japan. They've also been very kind and gave us a shout out on one of their latest videos, and we're more than happy to return the favor, of course, but regardless of the collaboration, their channel is the real deal. Highly recommend you check it out, especially if you are thinking about or are digital nomads. It'll be in this episode show notes, or just search for Learners and Makers Travel Family. Again, they're very easy to find. Now, for the second conversation. This one's with a young couple who are looking for a holiday home in Osaka that they also want to rent out when not in use. So the hybrid model again. And so we talk about how short-term rentals work. We break down purchase costs and related taxes, the inherent dangers of buying very old wooden structures, Japan negotiation culture, and whether being a cash buyer plays any role in that, ownership structures, can properties be owned by multiple individuals or companies, and so forth, where to find potential listings, and what working with us as consultants actually looks like in practice, all stages of the purchase process from the initial identification of potential listings and all the way to settlement. So again, pretty thorough discussion about all things related to these hybrid holiday home slash short-term rental properties, which are becoming increasingly popular, in theory at least. Have a listen to this one too, and I'll see you again one last time on the other side.
We interrupt this broadcast to tell you about Tokyo Family Stays. They're a short-term rentals company in Tokyo, and they offer a home away from home experience, which is just perfect for remote working, quarantining, if that's still a thing, or if you just need somewhere quiet to get away from the world. They offer a variety of options for families, corporate relocations, or even if you're simply transitioning between homes in Tokyo. The properties are super comfortable, tastefully furnished, fully equipped with all amenities, and they accommodate up to 10 people. So really the only thing you'll need to bring with you is your toothbrush and maybe a change of clothes. They come with fast, unlimited wireless internet, dedicated workspaces, and fully equipped kitchens. And they're just a delight to stay in. Fantastic alternative to Japanese business hotels, which if you've ever stayed in one, you probably know. They're tiny, they're noisy, fine for a night or two if you're on your own. But longer term or with a family, you'll probably feel you're in a jail cell very quickly in a Japanese business hotel. So if you want to give yourself a sense of space and freedom by renting a real home, with comfortable Western beds, including all the necessities like baby bedding, children's toys, high chairs, etc., you definitely want to reach out to Tokyo Family Stays. They've been at it for over a decade. They're a fully licensed minpaku or short-term stay operator. And as a special bonus for our viewers and listeners, they're also throwing in a breakfast basket upon arrival for anyone who books and mentions the Japan Real Estate Podcast or NTI. And not only for guests, if you're a property owner, you've got an investment property that you want to tweak for higher profit, or a holiday home that you want to rent out when you're not using it via short-term stays, drop them a line today, see how they can help you maximize your property's income. And again, as a special bonus to our viewers and listeners, they're also offering a free audit of your existing short-term stay listings without any obligation whatsoever. So feel free to reach out to them at tokyofamilystays.com. Well worth a visit. And again, if you're in the market for a family home in or around the Tokyo metropolitan area, Emil's your man. Don't be shy to reach out to him as well at sales@realestate.jp. And now back to the podcast.
Okay, so let me browse through your email. By the way, we've got some cats fighting here, so I might need to jump away from the screen for a minute.
Is something like this better for the face?
Let me see. A little bit better, yes. Yes, now I can see you've got a beard and I can definitely see Diana's face. Perfect.
Thank you.
Okay, so you found us through Cheap Houses Japan. You're looking for assistance with a property in Osaka.
Yeah.
And you sent us two sample listings. Okay, so we'll review the listings in a minute.
Sure.
But first, did you, I see that Faye answered some of your questions. Do you have any other questions that weren't answered?
Not really. I mean, our biggest question is about taxes and how much we can expect to pay regarding like adding taxes and the real estate service fee and all of these extra fees that are involved when purchasing a house.
You mean the purchase costs, everything together?
Yes, everything together.
Well, your budget is quite low. You mentioned Osaka and Kobe, so we'll have a look at those listings in a minute, because Osaka and Kobe are usually pricier than that. I'm just a little bit worried about what you found. But generally speaking, you can expect the purchase costs to be, at this budget, probably about 15%, maybe potentially 17 or 18%.
Okay.
The realtor fee, there's a formula to it, but if it's under 8 million yen, it's always a fixed amount of 330,000 yen.
Okay.
So just that is like the budget of 4 or 5 million, that's about, what, 8% of the purchase cost right there? And then legal and registration will be somewhere between 3 to 6% usually. There's a purchase tax bill that you'll get after settlement, 6 to 12 months after settlement. That's another 2-3%, depending on the official evaluation.
Okay.
The purchase tax and the legal and registration fees are determined by the property's official evaluation, which is always going to be different to the market price. So unfortunately, we can't give you exact numbers on that until we're closer to settlement.
Okay, so if we add all this extra cost, yep, we are looking at, we are looking something like 30%, like 30% in taxes, like including
No. It's not going to be more than 20% in any case.
Including the real estate, the tax for the realtor and the tax of the houses?
Yeah, so if the total is, let's say, 5.5 million yen.
Yeah.
Worst case, legal and registration, let's say 6%. That's 330. The realtor is another 330.
Oh, okay.
And then the purchase tax is, let's say, worst case, 3%, I think.
Oh, okay.
So 330, 330, 660, 7, about a million yen. Yeah, so worst case, about 20%, I think.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Got it.
That's just because the properties you're looking at are very cheap. If they're pricier, the percentage would be lower.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. So with that in mind, let me open those two listings and I'll share my screen so that we're looking at them together. This is, you've had some question about short-term rentals in there. Did Faye answer that for you?
Oh, yeah. She say like she can connect us with a company that can deal with it.
That maybe we'll be able to deal with it. With short-term rentals, the first thing you need to find out is whether the local municipality allows it in that area for that property.
Okay.
Some things we'll be able to maybe renovate and fix, like, for example, if the guest rooms need to be larger compared to the common areas, then that's something that we can maybe renovate to fix. But there are some places where they say you can't be within, I don't know, 500 meters to a school. And if the property is, there's nothing we can do about that. So if your goal is definitely to only buy a property which can be rented out short term, we'll have to do all of those investigations before we start pouring money into viewings and structural inspections, because those will all cost more than the finding out if it's going to be feasible for a license or not.
Okay, I see. I was looking at your video. I think Michael did a video. It's not from Cheap Houses Japan.
Yeah, Cheap Houses Japan. Yeah, that's him.
Okay. You have this summit for Japan real estate, and yep. I start following Tokyo Family Estates.
Yep.
Yeah, like I watched the interview in YouTube, and she was the one saying about like she can help us with short-term rentals. So I was wondering if that's the person you will suggest if we decide.
No, Tracy works in Tokyo and the areas around Tokyo. In Osaka, we work with other companies.
Oh, I see.
And I mean, if they can't do it for any reason, we can try to research and find other companies for you. But if they don't feel that the property is in a good enough location or cannot get a license or not going to be profitable enough, then they're not going to take it on.
Okay.
Yeah. And this property, the second one is already gone. This first one is near Nagata Station.
Oh, okay.
The Kodama one.
The Kodama is gone.
The what? Sorry? Yeah, the Osaka one is gone.
Okay.
Kadoma, sorry, the Kadoma one. Yeah, Kadoma one is gone. I mean, yeah, it's fairly central. Maybe it would work, but I don't know. We'll have to talk to the property managers to find out. From Nagata Station to Kobe Station is 23 minutes by train. Yeah, close-ish. It might be interesting for some guests. I don't know. I'm not the expert on that. We'll have to check with the local companies that do the management.
Okay. I see.
Okay, so first thing I'll say is this is built 1971. It's very old by Japanese standards. They're not really built to last in Japan. Not very durable materials here. Okay. So it's very likely to have some major structural issues. We'll find out when we do a structural inspection. But if you only target properties that are this cheap and this old, you might end up paying for a lot of structural inspections until we find something that's in good shape. So each structural inspection will cost between $1,000 to $2,000. If you're going to be doing 10 of those, that's already a quarter of your budget just for inspections. So if at all possible, I would highly recommend to raise your budget. This budget is going to buy you very old properties that are going to be in likely not very good condition. And okay. If there's something cosmetic, then we can quantify it and we can decide if we want to go ahead with an extra $2 or $3 million expense. But if it's something major structural like foundation, roof, termite tracks, tilting, sinking, that's not going to be worth repairing. That's going to be like close to the cost of a brand new build.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So
if you're going for properties as old as these, I don't like your chances. I mean, you're the boss. We'll help you buy whatever you want to buy. But I'd much rather see you expand your budget a little bit and go for something that's maybe 30 years and younger, not 50 years.
Okay. We are also thinking like if we expand our budget, we were thinking around 8 million yens. What are your thoughts about 8 millions?
That's usually the starting point for something that could be in good condition. Yes, we normally recommend to look somewhere between 8 to 12 million yen if you want to buy cheaper.
Okay.
We can, I mean, I definitely like it more than 4 or 5, yeah.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And then we'll be able to at least aim for 30, 35-year-old structures, which have a better chance of not having so many major structural issues.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this one looks like it was renovated on the interior, but it's not saying anything about the exterior. So I don't know. Structural stuff, I mean, we can't see it in photos. It's something that we have to get the architects out there to look at.
Okay. Okay, yeah, in that case, I think we need to talk to get to 8 million at least.
Unless you're okay being, you know, deep in the countryside, then you might be able to find something younger for that price. But then you're going to be far from Osaka and Kobe.
Okay. Yeah, this is something that we have to talk about, like we probably we have to discuss. We need to figure it out. Another of my question is, like, if we are paying like cash, if we are paying everything, how aggressive we can do the offer, right? Like,
you can't. It's not, Japan is not a negotiating culture. You can try to offer 10, maybe 15% off if the house is vacant. It might or might not be accepted, but if you try to discount more than that, they're not going to take us seriously and they're not going to get back to us anymore.
Okay.
The so fact the- that you're a cash buyer gives you priority over somebody who's applying with a mortgage. So they'll prioritize your offer before another offer if it's at the same price, but it's not a reason to negotiate more, no.
Okay, so usually like the price we are looking at the listings, that's the like that's the price, like the fixed price.
We can try 10, 15% off. It's not going to offend anyone. Whether it's going to be accepted or not is up to the seller.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay. Do you have any other questions regarding the...
Well, not exactly right now.
Probably like we can expand their budget. We are like we were considering either like buy our house like ourselves as a couple, or we are thinking like to buy it with another family, right? Like is another person, like very close friend.
Yep.
If we want to buy the property, like with two families involved, right?
Yep.
In terms of like legally, like can we register the house under two different families?
Yeah, or... it's not a problem. It's not going to cost you anymore. We just need to let the lawyer know what the percentage of ownership is going to be. So 25% each or 50-50, whatever the case may be.
Okay. Okay. That's so it. That's not a problem at all. Okay. So if we invite and if we are buying the house with two families, I think like for sure we can expand our budget.
Yep.
So for you, like if we want to buy around Osaka, Kobe, either Wakayama, like what's the ideal budget for you?
Wakayama will be cheaper. Kobe will be a little bit cheaper. If it's in Osaka, probably around 10 million yen is where I'd start looking. If it's okay. Kobe, maybe 8-9. If it's Wakayama, maybe 7-ish. I mean, the criteria should be to first look for anything that's 30 years and younger. I mean, 20 years and younger would be great, but I don't think you'll get there with that budget. So 30 years and younger. And then see what comes up and how much they cost. And then based on that, you can filter down to locations, I think.
Okay.
How are you searching for properties, by the way?
Like we are pretty much just using the listings from Cheap Houses Japan.
Okay, well, that's a great newsletter, but that's hand curated. I mean, Michael manually searches for the nicest houses he can find and he makes a list. It's not a huge amount of listings.
Okay.
So I'll reply to your email.
Yeah, we are also like looking for, of course, if you have like a bigger portfolio, we would love to see it, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's a very open market. Nobody really has a portfolio here. All the properties come from the same sources, basically. Occasionally, we find something that maybe hasn't been published yet, but eventually they'll all make it to the major websites. But there's a good English website called Akia Mart. And okay. The subscription, I mean, there's a free version that lets you see houses up to $20,000, but you want a little bit higher than that. Mm-hmm. The subscription is pretty cheap, and I'll give you a discount code as well, which you can use on checkout. What they do is they scrape all of the major property portals. So there are four to six major property portals in Japan that usually have all the listings on them. And Akia Mart just collect all of that information and they present it in a, you know, modern way compared to the Japanese website with map interface, drill down, filters, and all in English. And there's always about a million listings on their platform at any given time. So I think that's the easiest way to search that I know in English.
Mm-hmm.
So I just sent you the link. If you can subscribe, use that discount code to get a bit of a cheap, it's pretty cheap anyway, but get the discount. Yeah. And then send me listings that seem interesting to you on there. And then we'll mm-hmm. review them together. And once we have like a final shortlist, then we'll get started.
Let's go.
Okay, let's perfect. If we increase the budget to 8 to 10 million yen, yep. Are we still in 20% tax?
Or it's not tax. Let's not call it tax. It's a bunch of different fees.
Yes.
No, that will be closer to 14, 15%, worst case, hopefully less.
Okay.
Higher price this time.
14 to
Because
15.
the lawyer and the realtor both have minimum fees that they have to charge. So once we get higher in price, then that becomes an actual percentage and not minimum fees, and then it becomes cheaper.
Okay, this friend that is interested in buying the house like together, he is traveling to Japan in
July.
July.
Okay.
Like, if we haven't find the house by that time, like if he wants to go there and physically look at the houses,
Yep.
this comes with a like an extra price. I was reading through your policies, and I don't know if I understood properly, but sounds like
So, first of all, agents will not accept an offer on any property before somebody views it physically, if it's a vacant property.
Okay.
So, whether we do it with you or we do remote viewing on your behalf, anyway, somebody will have to go see the property. There will be, so the realtors, if we're consulting you on the purchase, we need to get paid in advance. That's just a few hundred dollars. And then the realtor who will be representing you, they only need to get paid on settlement, so you don't need to pay them anything in advance. But if we need them or somebody else that we send to go with you and view properties or to do remote viewings on your behalf, then yes, they need to charge for their time and also for the trip costs. We'll try to send somebody from Osaka to make it cheaper. They charge normally, the people that we send charge 4,400 yen per hour.
Okay.
So if they're with you for the whole day looking at five, six properties, it might be, I don't know, 20, 30,000 yen maybe.
4,000 per hour for visiting.
Plus trip expenses, which is not going to be very high if they're coming from Osaka. And depending on how many hours they spend, the meals that they have to eat when they're out. So 1,500 yen per meal.
Okay, so once we got the listings, the ones that we are interested, you say like usually like we conduct the inspection, so it's not like we are doing an inspection in every house. We were just going to do it in our top in our
The
in the
structural
one that is,
inspection, you mean?
yes, the structural inspection that is $1,000.
Yeah, so we'll take it one by one. You once we review them together, then you'll prioritize them for us in order of which one you like the best and which one you want to dig into first. And then we'll do the viewings for all of them, because if we're already sending somebody out there, they might as well use that time to look at other properties. But once you're ready to submit an offer on any of the properties, then we submit the offer, and on the offer application form, we write that it's pending a structural inspection report. And then, as soon
Okay.
as the seller accepts our offer or renegotiates the price, whatever, once the offer has been finalized and accepted, that's when we'll commission the structural inspection. And then it'll take about 2 weeks to schedule it, another 1 week maybe to get the report. We'll review it together, and then we'll decide if you're proceeding with this one or going on to the next one.
Okay. Okay. Good. Understood.
Pretty clear.
Okay, yeah, pretty clear. We
But
are
we'll
gonna
have a
start.
lot more to-ing and fro-ing when we're looking at actual listings. This is just the basics.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Okay, so yeah, we are gonna start checking this website, Akiya Mart.
Yep.
Yeah, just look for
We'll
houses
talk
with
to your
a.
friend first, make sure that you have the budget.
Yeah, of course.
And yeah, when you have like a list of candidates, email me again, or in my email that I just replied to you with the link, you also have my mobile number at the bottom. You can add me on WhatsApp and we can chat there. I'll respond a lot quicker over there.
Okay, great. Thank you
That's
so
that
much.
works a
My
lot. Thank you so
Yeah.
much.
Talk to you
Thank you
soon.
so much. Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye. So there you go. Two similar buyers on the budget and even the location front, but very different in their personal circumstances, their goals, their motives. They also both mentioned the Japan Real Estate Summit, which again is happening again this coming April 18th and 19th, 2026 to be exact. And you can pre-register for your discounted early bird tickets right now. Just hop over again to the show notes or to our website, nippontradings.com, and secure your live or online discounted tickets today. Now, before we go, we're also, as always, going to tell you and also link to our other sponsor's website. That's Hiroshi Shimizu, immigration lawyer and administrative scrivener. If you're thinking about moving here on a more permanent basis, or you're already in Japan on some sort of a temporary visa, and you want to switch to a longer term or permanent one, or if you're considering setting up a local company or a branch office of a foreign company, and you've got any sort of business or visa-related inquiries, or even if you just want to find out what your options are on any of these topics, feel free to contact Hiroshi Shimizu. You can find him at japanimmigrationexperts.com. And he can help you set up a company, apply for any kind of visa, or just provide you with the best advice and extremely affordable consultation related to these topics. And he's already done that for many of our listeners. So feel free to reach out to him. Again, that's japanimmigrationexperts.com, and you'll be well on your way. And that's it from us for today, folks. Hope you've enjoyed this episode of the Japan Real Estate Podcast. Do share it with your networks and please let us know what you think. So leave us a short rating or review on the iTunes Store, on Spotify, or just drop us a line in the comment section of wherever you might have found this episode. We love hearing from you. Hope to have you with us again next time. And until then, have a great day or night ahead. Yoroshiku.